Great. Warm welcome, everybody, and particularly warm welcome to Maura Dempsey, who's talking to us from Melbourne in Australia, where it's now evening time. Maura's going to be talking about her work that she's developed over many years around rhythmic movement training and primitive reflexes. And she's been working with this since the, well, I don't know when, mid-1990s, I think it is. And I also know that
Oh, something like that.
yes, Maura is also a kinesiologist and author of some books, and has actually received some awards for her service to Brain Gym, which many of you will be familiar with. And her books are the Beyond the Sea Squirt: A Journey with Reflexes, from 2004. Oh no, sorry, 2019. And then Movements That Heal, published in 2010. So really warm welcome to you, Maura. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Great.
Yes. So I have to go down here and do this share screen. So welcome, everyone. I'm sorry, my doorbell's going, but.
That's right. Do you want to say a little bit more about yourself? That was quite a brief introduction from me.
I am a kinesiologist. I was a teacher, a secondary teacher, and then a primary school teacher. I was in teaching in a school originally in country Victoria in Australia, and I went to Malaysia on Australian Volunteers Abroad for a while, and I stayed in Malaysia in Sarawak, which is part of Borneo, for about 7 years, not always as volunteer. Then I went to Singapore for about 10 years. And I came across Brainium and Educay as a way of, actually for myself, but I had great profound changes, and I could do things differently. And over time, I became an instructor in Takiva Health and kinesiology and things. And then in, I guess, the late 1990s, I came across reflexes. I started to investigate reflexes and primitive reflexes because I had clients where it kept coming up. And so I started to say, well, I better go and find out about this. And they fascinated me then, and they continue to fascinate me now about these whole way we have of this foundation that they have for reflexes, for laying our posture, first of all, but then that leads on to learning and behaviour and stress. And so that's how we got here, quite unexpectedly. I was just quite happily teaching English and I never thought my life would take this path, and here I am doing this. And I find it fascinating that they provide this foundational aspect of learning, emotional challenges, behavioral challenges, and I think that they, if we can go back and we can put this back into the body, we can get the body to change, and we can help to change some of these other patterns in our life.
Yeah, wonderful. I know that we've had Sally Goddard Blythe. You're probably familiar with her work on our birth journey and e-health. And one of the things that struck me around this, I've been interested in primitive reflexes for many years as well, but in the UK, it's not, doesn't seem to be as nearly well known about as in Australia, certainly in the school system.
I don't know if it's well known in Australia. Anyway, it's a growing area, but it's one of these things that now more people are learning about it, and more people are understanding it. And it, you know, as more OTs work, and you get more sensory integration, and how reflexes and the senses have to work together. And I think that, like anything, a slow understanding of things change, and then all of a sudden it goes, that. And I think that's starting to happen now, where that expansion of knowledge is coming in, and people say, oh, we need to look at this as part of what it is that's going on for people, because it is very foundational. And of course, you know, working before birth is always very difficult. What's happening before birth, neurologically and things, and we're just finding out more and more as we go along, because My late mother would be very surprised I have anything scientific in me at all.
Well, it's the practical things that
are important. So am I.
And I know you're going to start in a minute, so I'll stop asking you questions. But we had another lady talking about reflexes a few weeks ago, and she was talking about how, which I didn't know, how a lot of these reflexes develop in response to maternal movements, so mum walking, you know, when baby's still in the womb and stuff like this.
Yeah, well, I don't know if they develop because of that. Personally, I think what it is that's part of the development that's needed. So when a mother doesn't move, so that movement of the mother helps the movement of the infant, and it helps reflexes to develop. So when there's no movement from the mother, then it's like the baby's not getting that movement that helps the reflexes on their journey, because they're a journey. They're not just, oh, here I am. They actually have things and a pathway that they have to take.
Interesting.
And so when you have a mother who has a lot of bed rest or is quite sedentary, it affects how that development occurs. So that's my understanding of it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yes. Okay,
so you've got some slides to show, I think, Maura, haven't you?
I have, yes. Yeah. So let me just get it up here. Because I've got it on the wrong end. There you go. And okay, so this is looking here at what I think is our foundation of learning. And I just want to look here at this foundation of safety and stability. So I'm just going to take a little aspect of this out of here. And looking at this reflex development and integration of stress and emotional responses on a physical level. And I think that reflexes are very important for this, and we live in a world and children that's very stressful, and children are really very stressful, and if they don't have this foundation in place, then it can be very difficult for them. So as we said, that rhythmic movement training international is which I represent is a reflex integration program that explores the roles of babies' natural development and of movements through various stages of development. So at a very basic level, it's about how we develop our movement patterns as we mature, and posture and all these aspects of movement that lead on to other things. And we're looking at this of what's happening before birth, that first 6 months after birth, as they learn to get up on their hands and knees, first of all, and then as they learn to walk. So we have to move from our planes of development. So learning to walk and how we learn to walk will have very much dependent on what has happened before that time. So reflexes are very much the foundations of our neural network, and reflexes help to develop our central nervous system and these neural networks that we have to develop to learn. They're important for helping us to establish head control, which leads on to postural control. It's important for developing our muscle tone and posture, and they're the basis of our ability to learn to move and learn later on. And it's also important for the development of our choice. And I say that because reflexes, primitive reflexes or infant reflexes, there's no choice about this for a baby. They move their head some way and their arms and legs have to move. And there's no choice about that. And if these reflexes stay active in the system, if they persist in the system, then we still have, it's like we have no choice about anything. That's how it stays. And at some level, when we work with these children or adults who have these learning challenges, they often talk about how they feel like they've got no choice. And at a foundational level, that's still sort of what's happening at some level, because these reflexes have no choice about what they do in the body in there. So these reflexes also have this role to play in this underlying ability we need to develop to feel safe in the world, because feeling safe to is takes the first call on our nervous system in any situation. And if we don't feel safe, then we go into that behavior that says, get me out of here, or I freeze, or come and rescue me. Because, and if we don't feel safe, it becomes very difficult for us to learn. Because when I'm in a stress pattern, all I have access to is what I have done in the past in that same situation, whether it worked or not, that's all I have access to. So I'm going to talk about reflexes as being a journey in here. So reflexes have to, they go on a journey. They have to emerge through, they have to develop and peak. And for many of these infant reflexes, their peak time is birth. They help us to be born. And then they're going to do their part after birth. Then they're going to integrate or inhibit, or and then they transform into another part of the movement system that we have, and they help to put patterns of movement into the body. And when I say that, I mean something like we take the hand, they teach something like the hand to open and the hand to close, and I need that throughout life. And if I haven't developed that completely, then I don't, they don't transform into these adult abilities to grab onto things and to let go of things. And we drop things throughout our life, or we hang on to things in too hard a way. So we have different categories of reflexes. One of these categories are intrauterine reflexes. Now, intrauterine reflexes mean that they go through all of their stages before birth. That one of these reflexes is the fear paralysis reflex, or the FPR. So so the FPR needs to go through all its stages through birth, as it helps to lay foundations for feeling safe in the world. When the fear paralysis is still active, then under stress, it shuts us down. And we can't move, we freeze, we withdraw. So another group of reflexes are primitive reflexes, sometimes called infant reflexes, sometimes called primary reflexes, also sometimes called neonatal reflexes. These begin emerging at around about the ninth week in utero, as we move from our embryonic stage of development to our fetal stage of development. And the Moro reflex is the first of these primitive reflexes to emerge, and it is a brainstem level reflex as a response to stress. And so the Moro helps us to get away from things. And so there are stages to the Moro. One is that the movement is away and the head goes back and we fling our arms and our legs out from the body. And the second stage is a slow closing in and clinging and grasping response. So the baby needs to cling and to grasp and to be hugged to learn to feel safe in the world and to know that there's these safe places. And so it's a far more exciting response than the fear paralysis. So because sometimes the response of the reflexes will tell us, are we looking at a more primitive response through the fear paralysis, which it shuts us down, I don't have access to movement, or am I in that more primitive stage and I can actually have some access to movement when I'm under stress? So some other reflexes that we can look at, and I know I'm doing this very briefly, is the TLR, which is also the tonic labyrinthian reflex. And this helps that first part of the Moro to help to establish head control, which is important for postural control and our ability to become upright in the world. We have other reflexes, the babkin, the rooting suck, the palmar grasp, the infant plantar. These help the second part of the Moro to integrate and to let go of the need to cling and to hang on in here. And they all help us to establish a sense of stability, security and safety, and this connection to ourself and to others in the world. So if I learn how to feel safe in myself and to connect and understand myself, I learn to connect to others in a safe way, and then I can go out into the world in a safe way. Another group of reflexes are postural and lifelong reflexes in there. And so these are what we aim to have. So these are there throughout our life, and they're meant to be well established through the integration of the primitive reflexes. So these will emerge and develop as those primitive reflexes integrate, and they are no longer the primary source of our movement. So the primitive let go of controlling movement, and the postural will start to take over. And so many of these postural and lifelong reflexes begin to emerge between 2 to 4 months after birth. So the more the primitive integrate, the more resources the lifelong postural reflexes have to be able to develop and to establish themselves and to establish postural control, emotional control, and behavioral abilities. And so and some other reflexes that need to develop are the adult startle or the Strauss reflex and the tend and guard. These are also involved in this ability to know what is safe and not safe, and will be involved in activating the fight or flight reflexes, and we should only activate a few times in our life. But if we haven't established this safe level of safety in our life, they activate more than they should, and we go into flight or fight far more than we should. So I want to talk about these defensive systems that we need to develop to feel safe in the world, because when our defensive systems are well established, we can formulate a well-modulated flight or fight response. And that means the flight or fight, we can perceive, we have an accurate understanding and perception of what is happening around us. So if we look down here at the bottom, down here, you'll see in the graph down in the bottom that you'll see that we've gone from embryonic to fetal stage in development and up to birth. And you'll see that blue line there, that's the fear paralysis emerging through at around about 5 weeks. It's peaking there at about 8 weeks, 5 days, or about 9 weeks. And this is when we're moving from our fetal embryonic stage to our fetal stage of development. And you'll see there that that's when the Moro, the first stage of the Moro, begins to develop. And up until about 30 to 32 weeks, the fear paralysis and the Moro join together. And early on, the fear paralysis response is stronger, withdraw and freeze. And through that time, up until about 32 weeks and the first stage of development, the Moro should take over as a response to stress. And that's it. So I developed that ability to fling away. And then at about 32 weeks, which is when the lungs fully develop and I start practicing breathing, the second stage of the Moro, the clinging stage, the embracing stage, will emerge through. And all being well through birth, after birth, by about 2 months of age, the Moro starts to integrate. And by about 4 months of age, the adult startle should come through as our first response to stress, if that's developing well. And of course, that takes a while to establish itself well. And the adult startle, and you'll see young infants doing this if the Moro is well integrated, where there's a loud noise, a door bangs or the dog barks, and an infant will just sort of lay, about 6 months of age, they just sort of raise their shoulders a bit, bring their head down and look around and just go, oh, it's just the dog barking. Then they understand that it's not dangerous if this is well established. If it's not well established in the system, we can spend a lifetime being startled by any small sound or anyone touching us, an ant crawling over us or something like that, as our sensory system puts us on alert and what is safe and what is not safe. And you'll see this in many people. So this defensive system is important. And when it works well, we develop and we have a realistic understanding of what is safe and what is not safe. So when it's not established well, then we become very reactive to sensory stimulation and we perceive danger in many things that are not actually dangerous. So let's have a little, I want to look, focus a little bit today on this fear paralysis reflex. As we said before, it starts emerging at around about 5 weeks in utero, and it begins merking with that first stage of Moro at about 12 weeks. It's a spinal level reflex. That means that this reflex activates from the spine, not in the brain. And that's because our brain is not actually developing. Our brain will start to develop and move into place at around about between 5 weeks to about 9 weeks. And that is the cortex of the brain will move out at this, between this time, and it will form the basis of the brain and the cortex of what's happening in there. So the fear paralysis actually activates from the level of the spine in there. And as a response to stress, as I said before, it's to withdraw and freeze in there. And you'll see this in some people where this fear paralysis is still straight strong. They just withdraw and freeze. And it's like, I'm not here, go away. And it's very hard to get, and then you have to get them moving somehow to get them out of this stress response. And we know that, and we come across many people who live with fear as an immediate prime reaction to any perceived dangerous situation. And for these people, many, many things are perceived as dangerous. And while the danger can be seen as not rational for many others, for the person with the fear paralysis that's retained, it's very real, and for them it's very terrifying because, as I said, it's perceived danger. It's not necessarily real, but it's real to the person. And it's not a logical aspect of it, it's very real for these people, and they live with it throughout their life, and it can be very debilitating. And they live with this constant state of overwhelming fear where they can do nothing except withdraw and freeze. And you see this, sadly, I see it more and more in children now when I see them, that they are living in this very, very anxious time, and they're very anxious, they withdraw, they freeze, they go on their computer screens because, you know, that's why they like screens. It locks them down, it allows them to freeze, it helps them to lock out the world around them. And when we can understand this, we can perhaps find some ways to help to get around this stress in their system. So what happens with the fear paralysis is people actually feel like they're unable to voice out their desires and options. When we freeze, we physiologically actually freeze and like pushes up against our voice box, and it's like, I can't even get words out. And you've got these people who say they've got child with elective mutism or selective, and it's not, they don't elect it at all. They just physically can't speak or get sounds out. They tend to withdraw from social situations. Perhaps they feel invisible, or they like to feel invisible. They like to feel like that I don't have to be here. I'll pretend I'm not here, and if you don't notice me, that's good. Maybe they're hypochondria because if I'm sick, I don't have to participate in the world. And for some adults, this really becomes very, very strong. Perhaps there's panic attacks and phobias that get stronger and stronger and stronger as the years go on, such as agoraphobia. There may be sleep problems. And you find these, when babies are born, these babies who find it very, very difficult to settle into a sleep pattern, that this is often the fear paralysis. So why does it stay so strongly active in some people? So we need to look at our early embryonic environment, which can be toxic to the developing embryo. on a cellular level, we can actually have a reaction, a stress reaction from the moment of conception, if it's been a very difficult conception or you live, or the environment you're in is very stressful, the mother is in is very stressful. But however, in many ways, what we have is that reflexes are a nervous system response. And it is not until that 5 weeks that we actually have the basic nervous system laid down. This is when the neural tube is developed. And the neural tube is the foundation of our whole nervous system as it's going to develop. And this is when that gets laid down, that neural tube, and then we're able to start to have any sort of movement response to stimulation. So some of these stresses are, of course, environmental, the mother's nutrition can have an effect. There could be substance abuse, electromagnetic fields, and some people are quite sensitive to electromagnetic field, and some people have a lot of that going on around them. It can be emotional stress, the mother's reactions or responses to the pregnancy itself, the mother's relationship to herself or to a partner or her community can all have an effect. And at times of trauma, we need to understand that the fear paralysis can reactivate and become a primary response to stress. So in PTSD, it's like I go back to all I can do is to withdraw and freeze. It's like that pattern gets frozen into the system again. It's like we've gone back developmentally to the fear paralysis and we're having time difficult to get that trauma out of the system and to move on. And we keep going back into this cycle of this. So we sometimes work with people with PTSD and we're always looking at this fear paralysis response to move out of the freeze response that comes back in. I want to show here one of the movements that we have that we sometimes work with rhythmic movement. So rhythmic movement has many aspects to movement. We have a passive component in there where we're wanting to get the movement of the system in place, where we want to move the system and to get a rhythm and an organization and an ease into the system. We have an active components of rhythmic movement, where people start taking over movement themselves, which is of course what infants do. And that has to organize and become coordinated and easily and smooth in there. And then we have movements that are sitting and kneeling. And this is, of course, replicating when we got it on our hands and knees. Do I actually have that foundation in place? We also have some pre-birth movements there. And we also have some isometric techniques that we use with people, especially older children and adults, to help these long-term patterns of stress that we've put into the system to help to reorganize itself. So this movement here I'm going to show you is one of our passive movements where we're looking here. I'm working with a boy called Taylor here. I don't know Taylor all the time, so we joke a little bit. And we're trying to organize his system to get a smooth, easy movement. This is called sliding on the back. And you'll see me trying to get rhythm. We also need to understand in rhythmic movement that our body doesn't lie. And we often have a physiological sign that says, I need to pause here. I need to allow my system to get used to this new way of being. And so these movements that we have, we also all the time are looking for a physiological thing that says, I need to pause. And so let's see what happens here with Taylor. I think I've got the sound on. I hope I have. Yeah.
Movement number 2, sliding on the back. This is Taylor, and I've got my hands here. And I push and I pull. And we see here, we're going to float. You see it's moving up into his head here. It's a small movement. What happens if I go too fast. Do you like that so much? Not so much. So we just need a nice, slow, steady rate in there. Alternatively, I can put my hands here and push, or I can push there or from behind the knees. But this seems to be the best movement here. We're just going to go there until he's ready to stop. Okay, we're just going to pause there now. All right, thank you.
So there's these books you could get any. It's the latest one, English, French, Spanish, or Italian. So I just wanted to talk about these movements a bit more, is that what we're aiming to get is that organisation in the body that allows us to get that organisation in movement. I mean, you'll see many of these children who have reflexes or adults who have reflexes that are still active, their movement becomes very uncoordinated and disjointed or very rapid or extremely slow because they can't organize their system. And the moment they go under stress, there's either chaos or shut down. I'm just going to sit down in there. So I think I'll leave it there for the moment. And any questions, I'm happy to answer.
Thanks, Maura. That was really, really interesting. I haven't been so familiar with the fear paralysis reflex, actually. It makes a huge amount of sense.
Yes.
Yeah. There's a question asking about, could you say more about the fear paralysis reflex in cases of loss of womb, like twin, and we talk about twin loss, you know, early twin loss, for example, and how to regulate in babies and children and even adults?
Well, if there's any sort of trauma and a twin loss or a loss that goes on, is that we set up patterns. And so one of the things that we're always attempting to do is to help the body change the patterns that it has, the stress patterns that it has. And so can we move through that stress? And often with children in particular, we have to start very, very slowly at our way of working with these patterns. And some children, we really work sometimes 10 or 20 seconds every second day to start with, to help their system to learn to come out of the stress, trauma and those patterns and learn to be safe in a new set sort of integration, a new way of moving, so we recognize that there's a stress there, and it's really important that we recognize those stress patterns and what happens in the body. So this is very much working from the body up, because that's developmentally how we work. And so, as someone said to me recently, the work of babies is to move, and the work of children is to play. And if you don't move and if you're still stuck in these patterns, it's hard for you to play. And so when we don't, we live in a world where we lock babies down a lot. The equipment we put them in locks them down. We give them screens that locks them down. And so they're not moving. And so one of the things about trauma is we don't move. And what we do is we attempt to work out a way of getting the body to feel safe to move. And I can then feel safe to move and to connect and to move through the trauma in a safe way. And as I said, it can be sometimes, not always, but we can work only sometimes very, very 10 or 20 seconds and the movement. And some children, their tactile system is so sensitive, they won't let you touch them. And we have to actually try to show them a movement to do and then, can you follow me? And then we look for these physiological signs that say enough for the moment. And you'll see those signs are things like red ears, the ears going red, the body tensing up or getting very floppy. Some kids will fall asleep and all these things. And so working for these signs and then finding the rhythm and the organisation, because there is always a spot, there is always a point where the body knows how to do something, even if it's only for 2 or 3 seconds. And that's our job, is to find that spot and to move on from there.
Wonderful, thank you. I mean, I guess...
I hope that answers the question for someone.
That's great. I'm just wondering, you know, we've done a lot on the Vegas and the whole polyvagal thing and the old Vegas, I guess, but I don't know, because this happened so early, and I don't know about the development of the old Vegas and when that starts, and you talked about the neural tube developing around the fifth week and stuff. Is this keyed in with the sort of like the old Vegas, the freeze kind of responses?
So what I think is that, and Stephen Porges' book I'm still trying to read.
It's quite difficult, isn't it? Yeah, it's quite intense. Yeah.
A 14-hour trip to Los Angeles from Melbourne, I got through 12 pages. But anyway.
That's bigger game.
Yeah. So my understanding, when I hear him talk and things like that, is that the old Vegas is very much for me connected to the fear paralysis, because the old Vegas under stress, it automatically shuts you down, and that parasympathetic comes on and stress. And the moro, which is the mammalian response, because I have access to movement, is related to that, is it the ventral vagus? So the model one. So the dorsal vagus is more related to the fear paralysis. It's that part there. And as we develop that mammalian response, which is movement and to get away from stress, that it relates far more to the new vagus, to the ventral. And so the old vagus relates very much to a reptilian response to stress. Immediate shutdown, I'm not here, I'm a chameleon, I'm all of that. And the other one is, I can get out of here. So I have access to movement.
I was watching that wonderful film, I don't know if you've seen it, My Octopus Teacher, the other day.
No, it's wonderful. It's my favourite documentary at the moment.
see all that happening there.
Yeah.
And I suppose what you're talking about as well, it really stresses the importance of us as therapists creating a safety, like, because that's kind of the first step, isn't it? Like when you're doing this work.
Many of these children and adults, they don't feel safe. So how do we find that spot in their body that they can feel safe? But sometimes I don't work necessarily myself with the fear paralysis or moro first off. Sometimes I'll work like with one of these more postural reflexes, because people have to feel safe around you to go to those foundations of safety. They will, and then in a more intentional sense, I'll work with fear paralysis and moro later. And so our intention when we work with people, of course, is very important. To be able to, so what's my intention here? And so I always want people to feel safe with me, because these are real foundational things about how to feel safe and stable. And I can't come in, I don't feel that I can come in and pull that rug underneath out from you in that intentional way. I know I'm always working on that. I know we're always, because nothing works in isolation, but in this very foundational sense, that's what I'm looking at.
And do you think this current sort of COVID thing is really keying into these old patterns, the fear paralysis?
Oh, I think so. I had for a few weeks, because everyone went into lockdown and there was no schools, and as we know, and so some people I knew said, would I come and tutor their kids a couple of times a week because homeschooling, because before they committed murder. So I worked with these couple, which is good fun. I hadn't been in like a classroom situation for a while, so it was really good fun. And you could see it in these kids, you know, that they were getting frustrated because they couldn't be around their friends and they couldn't go outside, and they you know, I took them outside to the trees across the road, but you know, you could see them, and because they hear all the talk all the time in the background, and they and their understanding is it's of danger and things like that. And so we have to find a way to help these kids feel safe. So I am wondering what the long term effect of this year, this very strange year we've had, is going to be. And I think that having information about fear paralysis and moro and being able to move it on will be very important for people, I think, to be, as they start to come out of this time.
Yeah.
But it will, it, you can see it in kids. They have this, you know, because they've been isolated. So they've been, if we think it's reptilian, it's, let's take you out of the world. You don't have connection. You're away. And if you do, you're on the screen, which is locking you down in some ways.
Mm. Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, I love your sense of humor as well. When you're working with kids, it's so important, isn't it? Because humor and play creates a sense of safety, and it allows that movement. I know Paul Porges talks about that, doesn't he?
That's right.
Like how it can create that movement.
That's right.
Move towards movement. Sorry, yeah.
That's right. And so we need to be very cognizant when we work with children about recognizing sounds. I've just had enough for the moment, and the body will tell you this, and you can just sort of like, oh, let's have a little break, or let's do that, and not to put them into overwhelm, because it's very easy to put people into overwhelm. Mm. It's incredibly easy to put them into some level of when they're feeling stressed, and so it's up to us to not do that. I've got a question here. It came from the Q&A down.
Oh yeah, it's from Jackie. She's just saying, commenting really so true about babies born to move and the development of modern baby equipment and parenting styles.
Oh, I'm sure other physiotherapy or therapist organisations have it, but there was a leaflet that came out from the Australian Physiotherapy Association a few years ago about the effect of baby walkers. And recommending that people not give them to their children because of what's happening developmentally for children when we use them. But it's okay. It gives us work.
I remember I was in Dubai recently, and I hadn't seen it before. It's probably quite common, but they had these the little babies had these holders for iPads, so that in the pram that they were, you know, a few months old.
I know. You can put them in the pram. You can put them on the bounce net thing. You could.
I'm wondering.
You can't say anything. Well, I tell you.
I'm wondering. Looking at that really nice chart. A couple of questions around this. Are these charts that you had? Are they in your books that you mentioned?
They're in the manuals.
Okay, in the manuals, yeah. Okay.
They're in the manuals. It's been a while since I wrote the book, so no, they're not in the books. But the little charts are in our manuals, the manuals that go with the courses.
Okay, because I really like that chart with showing the fear paralysis and the moral development was really interesting. And I'm just wondering, you know, because one thing within that chart that happens around, you know, it could be 6-8 weeks or whatever it is, around what we call discovery, isn't it? When a mum discovers she's pregnant. Mm. And so, and there are a lot of different reactions to that. I think the statistics are that in America, about half of all pregnancies are unplanned, for example. So, I'm just wondering with the impact of that. Now,
Yes, well, I often think so for me that they're on the scale. So if the fear paralysis, if there's a lot of stress very early and that's affecting the fear paralysis of the moro, and that they're not doing their journey well, then everything that comes after is going to be affected by it as well. So I just don't know if I can easily show. I've got some other charts that actually show it. If you just I'll see if I can find just so excuse me while I try to play with my computer for just a moment, and talking and
no problem,
and I see if I can find one of these charts I've got.
I'm also wondering, I don't want to distract you, but I'm wondering physically, like that you described the moro as a, I think it's sometimes described as a kind of the initial part as a sympathetic, like a moving away, you described it, yeah, which makes sense. And then the fear paralysis thing is
that's right. So there's a moving away and then there's a coming in.
Right. And with the fear paralysis, how does that manifest physically? Is that a curling in, a kind of protective?
So the fear paralysis does, so the fear paralysis is more for me, that what it does is that it will, there'll be a slight movement into the centre. So you've got to remember that the embryo doesn't have arms and legs. It just has these little, it has these little flippery type things of between five to 9 weeks. So I can't do this. I can't. So what it is that there's a slight, you know, you just sort of like a little tadpole-y type thing. You're only about this big. And so what it is a slight movement into the center, a slight withdrawal and then a freeze. So it's a small movement of withdrawal and a freeze. And then as the moro starts to develop, then I can start to go away. And then as the second part develops, I have to come in and bring my arms and legs in. So my arms and legs go out, my head goes back, and then I have to come in like this. And for me, those people in that second stage of the moro, you find people who are stuck there, then they are more, you know, the people who say, oh, come and rescue me, come and save me. if that makes sense.
So can you see this, the FBR in is that something you can recognize, say in a posture of the child, or just the way they hold themselves in a particular kind of way?
Yes, and so you'll see it in children, like in schools, who they try to be invisible. I just don't want to participate. I don't do they elective mutism. They don't make eye contact. They don't really participate. They love computers and things. It's sort of like lets them escape from the world. A little bit. It depends on how extreme it is. They tend not, the Moro kids are the more ones who fight and try and get out of things. These are kids who sort of just try to sort of escape from things. So where are we here? I think I found one. So here we are. So I'm going to come and share this screen here. Where are we? There it is. All right, so you can see here that I've got, is sharing? Oh, that's not what I wanted to do.
Oh, it was sharing, yeah, it was.
Oh, my sharing, as I, now I've got something on that I don't quite know what's happening. Sorry, I'm not very good at this, am I? I thought I was sharing the right thing. Let me get rid of that.
It was sharing. That's it. There we go. Yeah.
Is it coming up again? There we are.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And so you'll see here you'll see here you've got the fear paralysis of Moro, and then these other reflexes that come on afterward. Now I've got this is not, I don't know why I've got this as level one and two when this is our face of fear class. So these are some other reflexes. These are not all of them, but you'll see in here. So the fear paralysis is here. The palmar grasp comes on very, very soon after the plant. There, the plantar comes on very soon after the moro, the rooting suck, the babkin, the spinal pres. And so you'll see how if down here at the fear paralysis moro, if there's a lot of stress and these patterns are starting to get established in the body, and the more that, you know, and so you're getting these stress patterns forming, these responses to stress, it's going to affect the emergence and the development of these other reflexes. So this is just some of these reflexes in here. If that makes sense.
Absolutely, yeah, it's brilliant. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm not quite sure where we are, and I seem to have, I've got a very strange, I don't know what's going on here. I seem to have lost everyone.
No, that's fine. Now I'm here. You can stop sharing if you want. I'm just wondering.
I'm trying to stop sharing. There we are.
There we go. Well done.
Oh, technological master that I am. I'm usually not this bad, but I think there was too many things on. So that was just some of those reflexes. So if there's a lot of stress that's happening earlier, it's going to affect what happens later, because what's happening down there is holding these patterns in place. So it affects my posture. It affects my ability to participate. It affects how safe I am, and it affects, if we think of it, spinal reflexes, my ability to develop good posture and things like that.
Yeah, wonderful. Great. Well, thank you. I don't think we've
got other questions here.
I think you've kind of, they're just comments, really.
Right, they are, aren't they?
And Karen says she's currently training to be an RMTI consultant in the UK. And your knowledge.
Yeah. I'll get there one day. Back.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you. Thank you so much for being with us today, Maura. That's really wonderful. Thank you.
That's my pleasure. So rhythmicmovement.org, if anyone wants any information, we'll give it to
Great.
You.
Rhythmicmovement.org,
.org. And they're now online courses. If anyone's interested, there's some online stuff for people because we had to go with the times.
Great. Wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Just to say before we stop, next week we have Michael Shea. That's a free one on Monday evening, talking about multivagal theory or multivagal.
On the polyvagal. Oh, my poor head. I had trouble getting caught with two.
I know. And then we have... next Thursday we have another one on in the evening for our birth journey with Lorraine Grayston. Great. So thank you very much.
Thank you
so much for your time. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Bye.
Bye.